Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
I will just give you a bit of background on this. I'm going to do that again because I felt like I f***ed it.
I love your little lines. Your little, they're great. So does he good. Always do these?
He always
they're
does.
Brilliant.
Hello and welcome to another Curzon Film Podcast. In this episode, YouTube star Bo Burnham's 8th grade finally lands in our watch list, and Zsa Zheng Ke takes us from online to on crime with Chinese drama Ash is Purest White. Hi everyone, Jake here. How are you doing? Hope you're well. It's Friday, it's early, and we're just about to podcast. Thank you for listening. Whilst you're here, smash that subscribe button and don't forget to give us a like. For this episode, I've teamed up with some of my favourite influencers. We've got Ella Kemp.
Good morning.
Caitlin Quinlan.
Hello.
And to give us some unique insights into the world of filmmaking for YouTube, we have Bertie Gilbert here as well.
Online to on crime.
Okay, that's enough of that.
Oh,
okay,
wow.
That's it. You're never getting that voice again.
This just gets better
yeah.
and better.
Okay. God. All right. So it's lovely to have you all with us here to talk about these two films. Bertie is going to give us some interesting insights to the world of YouTube and filmmaking for it, which are going to tie in wonderfully to 8th grade in just a bit. Now, before we burn through Bo's debut, our fire starter this week is Ash is Purest White. Caitlin, can you tell us a little bit about this one, please?
Yep. So this is the latest film from Chinese director Zsa Zheng Ke. We follow Chow, who's a loyal girlfriend to a mobster, Bin, who is set to take over control of the kind of local gangster crime ring in this old mining town. But as Bin faces kind of attacks on his leadership, Chow is forced to protect him and goes above and beyond to the point of serving time in prison for him, soon realizing that actually she's going to get little back in return for her effort. So this is not your average revenge tale, but it's kind of a cool observation of a woman learning to live with the harshest realities in an ever-changing nation.
And it's a bit of a beast, isn't it? I think it's 150 minutes.
Yes, it's a bit of a long one.
Big old film.
Yeah, and not just in its length, but in its scale as well. I think this covers 18 years. It's set divided up into three chapters, I think six years apart, or six and then 10 years apart. And it's Tao Zhao who plays Chow, who's the kind of through line throughout that. Although we have Bin is very much a character throughout. She's our guide through this, and it's quite a transformative performance from her and through Bin, really, because of the situation he ends up in that final act. But I think this is definitely going to be a tough one, particularly with what's out at the cinema this week. We're not afraid to admit that there is maybe perhaps another epic film out this week as
Some
well.
Competition. Maybe.
Yes.
Maybe.
Why is this film not a slog? What is the reason that people should be seeking this one out?
Well, I think Chow as a character is very watchable. We're kind of following her through this story across this period in her life and this sort of period of growth and change. And really, she's a character that's worth rooting for and worth kind of... just worth watching, really. We're kind of guided by these emotions of anger and, you know, resentment and just this sort of revenge narrative that she's kind of undergoing. But there's something really kind of moving and quite affecting, I think, about the sort of changes that she has to go through and this sort of world that she's forced to sort of re-enter after a time in prison, that shows her, you know, just how quickly China as a nation and as a society can change, and how sort of fragile her role as a woman and as a sort of wife or girlfriend and, you know, as a leader, I suppose, kind of comes into conflict, which I think is a really interesting kind of thread to follow.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned this background of the changes in China at the time. This is happening at the turn of the 21st century, and it's very much a time that China is beginning to embrace capitalism. And I think her story very much holds up as a reflection to that attitude to capitalism through mm-hmm. China over the last 20 years.
Yeah, really. And I think if you've ever seen any other Zha Zhangke films, then you'll kind of see these recurring motifs and threads in Ashes Purest White that kind of look at how, yeah, as Jake says, how Chinese society is developing and how lots of kind of rural areas or mining areas are being demolished or taken over, flooded, you know, for example, in order to build these kinds of, you know, metropolitan infrastructures and these cities. And there's this lot of kind of, there's a lot of social realist frustration, I think, within the film that's kind of mingles nicely with this crime narrative, which is a bit sort of thrilling to watch, but is really layered and sort of intricate, I think, in what it's really sort of saying about the way these people interact in their world. And yeah, as I say, how it's been changing.
And it's not afraid to kind of break up this heavy gangster drama with mm-hmm. these kind of moments, particularly using music or occasionally a bit of narrative that reminds me of the bit in The Man Who Wasn't There, where it just diverges into a UFO story for a bit.
Yeah, I think you really don't expect that when you're presented with this runtime, this plot, this woman who has to face so many obstacles and things, and then they'll just chuck in a bit of like, oh, here's a bit of YMCA and here's something to break it up. And yeah, I like that there's those moments that are quite playful and surprising when they don't really need to be, because I think if you're going, if you've bought a ticket for this film, you kind of know what kind of films you like and what you're going into, but it still toys with, like, not necessarily subverting the narrative entirely, but just peppering in like more little like creative flourishes that aren't necessary but are always really welcome. And I mean, I'd say the years that it spans, I think it's so necessary to have that many years to justify kind of the length and weight of the film. I don't know why the film in my mind is Boyhood, but you know, when you've got lots of years, I think, well, yeah, like maybe I do need 3 hours to cover 12, 18 years.
And it does really amp up that frustration, I think, and that sort of resentment of what's happening to her. And I also think, as well as the kind of music and the dancing and things like that, as a character, she's quite funny, and she has a lot of really brash sort of quips that she makes, and the way she sort of manipulates her way back into this world that she's been excluded from is just great. And I think there's something really, really kind of empowering and fun about a lot of what she does, even though it is a fairly long film. And yeah, as Ella says, it does cover a sort of a vast expanse of time and space, but it's, you know, it's really beautiful. I think it's definitely like visually stunning, I think, as well.
Well, and because that chaptering and the change in eras, it does keep, gives it a kind of pep, and it gives you a bit of energy with each of those changes as well. It's not like you're just laboriously slogging it through all in the same place at the same time. It's that kind of thing that gets you through the film as well. And as we mentioned, terrific central performance from Tao Xiao as well.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
And I think maybe for fans of recent film, Burning might be one to seek out. For those that might have seen that, come and check this one out. Do try and check it out in the cinema if you can, because as we said, visually it's quite stunning as well. So it's well worth seeing on a big screen. And as you said, there's not much out this week.
There is no other 3-hour film in the cinemas worth seeing.
So that's Ash's Purest White. Now it's time to see whether 8th Grade gets an A grade from our team. Now this is the debut from Bo Burnham as a director. It's about 14-year-old Kayla. She's who's played by Elsie Fisher. She makes YouTube vlogs in her bedroom. She's encouraging others to be yourself. But that's something that she struggles with. How ironic! she was even voted most quiet by her classmates, something I sadly never was. The film follows her in the last week of class before graduating to high school. This has taken a very long time to get here into UK cinemas, but we're very happy that it is finally here. We will start, I think, let's start by talking about you, Bertie, because there's a reason that we've got you here today, other than your fantastic film criticism. can you tell us a little bit about your background?
I'm a filmmaker, but my sort of background is pretty unconventional. Since I was 16, I've been making and posting short films predominantly on my YouTube channel, and it's only in the last year or two that I've kind of, you know, started to make stuff outside of YouTube and veer into more traditional media, which is why Bo Burnham to me is such an inspirational figure, because a lot of my peers who've done stuff on YouTube and in the kind of online space, there is a sort of sense, especially if you want to be a filmmaker, there's a sense that YouTube is a jumping off point, you know, it's a stepping stone, but you really shouldn't put all your eggs in that basket. And so to see someone like Bo Burnham, who is sort of cut from a similar cloth, soaring to these heights is really exciting. And Bo is someone that I've admired for such a long time. And, you know, his background is very much in comedy. He started on YouTube making these sort of really crass, bizarre songs, but at the core of them, though, he was always saying something, and he's done all these stand-up specials and things like that. And I think for a lot of my generation and kind of the social media generation, I think what he's done with his comedy is that he's always been able to articulate thoughts and feelings that a lot of us were unable to. And that's why it's always been very cathartic to watch Bo Burnham. And I think he's done the same thing with 8th Grade. I think he's articulated something really interesting about this social media landscape and the role it plays in young people's lives. And I think the film is, despite being really like relevant to now and it raises all these things that are very topical, I think it's got a really nice sort of timeless quality, and I think it's really universal. I think that's great.
Yeah. And it's a surprisingly sincere film, particularly if you saw what Bo Burnham as a writer or director may have been making when he was 16 in his bedroom.
Absolutely. I think if you don't know Bo Burnham and you're going into this film, you think, okay, it's a story about this 14-year-old girl. She's coming of age, seen loads of those. And then because it's so sincere and just truthful and just so well done, afterwards I thought, who is this man? And how has he got inside this teenage girl's brain? And at first, to me, it made no sense. But then I found it really satisfying to go back and re-watch all of Bo Burnham's, you know, his various stand-up specials and little videos and everything. And it does make sense, because even though he is, you know, however many years older and, like, not a young girl, it's all of those same anxieties that are just allowed to exist in their most imperfect and inarticulate form. And in a really, like, in a really unapologetic way as well. Like, he doesn't hide anything, from the way that she stammers over a sentence, like, that will never be edited over or started again, from the way she, like, the opening scene when she's aggressively putting makeup on her face, and then throughout you're like, well, she doesn't have perfect skin, but, like, that's, no one does when you're 14 years old. And so to kind of do like a seesaw, watching 8th Grade, then watching Bo Burnham, then watching 8th Grade again, then watching him again, it makes so much sense. And yeah, like, it's so cathartic, and oh, it's wonderful.
Yeah, I have to say, I never really watched him on YouTube. And so this was really my first encounter with him. And then I went back and watched his stand-up specials that are both on Netflix. And it's really interesting. Even, I think, one of the specials that was on there was from 2013. And you can see in that time how much he's shifted away. As you say, it was occasionally quite crass songs about willies and things like that.
I think if you
say
only...
That's not hilarious.
If you only had a kind of... Yeah, if you hadn't really sort of watched Bo Burnham in depth and you only had a vague idea of what his comedy was, but you knew it to be this kind of crass, you know, slightly vulgar and, you know... I think if you go into eighth grade with that sort of faint veil of understanding, but you'd also be so wonderfully surprised at sort of just how wholesome and lovely this film is, and then go back and watch his other stuff and realize actually it's been there all along.
Yeah, well, I mean, when I first heard that the Bo Burnham had done a feature film, I think my mind immediately kind of pictures some sort of Judd Apatow-esque comedy. But as you said, when it came out, it really did start to make sense. And I think on the topic of, you know, you were saying Bo Burnham isn't, you know, a 14-year-old girl and things like that. You kind of wonder what his relationship there is and how he relates to that story specifically. And I think something that's really fascinating for people who kind of got their career started through social media or have kind of existed online in a significant way is, you know, young girls are so vocal online. And I'm sure Bo Burnham has so many young girl supporters and fans and things like that. And so I wouldn't be surprised if over the years he's developed an interesting kind of affinity for those people. And especially if they're connecting to him through social media, I think when I watch it, I can see her as being someone that perhaps represents to him, you know, all those young women who've been watching him and have just been kind of existing on social media in such a significant way. And I just think, like I said, the film is really universal and the film is so kind of watchable. And I think there's something in there for everyone. And I think we can all relate to it in some sense. But I also think it touches on something about, you know, the world just keeps coming up with new ways to make young women feel inadequate, you know? And I think he told that story in a really earnest, honest way.
And I think it's great that there's nothing, you know, he's kind of acknowledging that there might, you know, this generation have grown up with social media and it's been there since they were born, maybe, you know, depending on exactly what age they are. But there's this understanding that really, as a generation, they're not wholly different from any other generation. They just have various different tools at their, you know, available to them. And I think, you know, all of these problems and anxieties and worries about growing up are so universal, and nothing that he does in this film suggests that, you know, they should be trivialized or made light of just because this is a generation that use Snapchat a lot or Instagram a lot. There's such a kind of, you know, these problems exist, you know, for everyone growing up. But the thing that I love as well is just that there is that universality, but I also think there's a kind of some slight nods that are just meant for a sort of internet generation, where he kind of
throws in the little
Vine references and the like Rick and Morty jokes and things like that. And it's like, I'm making this film for you, but I understand that this is, you know, these are problems that everyone can understand.
This film has, I'd say, one of the two acceptable instances of dabbing on cinema.
Is the other one us?
The other one's us. Yeah. And both of them are very self-aware.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
But I think, you know, when you're 14, again, talking about how universal this film is, and like I said, it feels sort of quite timeless and I feel like would still be relevant 10, 20 years from now. And I think when you're 14 and you have all this expectation on you, regardless of whether social media was a thing in your life, I think you want to isolate yourself. And I think in this film, social media, because on paper we're more connected than ever, but it really does breed this kind of isolation. And so then... Yeah, it's just this new way that idea manifests itself in these people's lives and, you know, arguably makes these young people's lives even more difficult and it's even easier to compare yourself to others when you have this stream of just constant, you know, artificial experiences and things like
that. Well, I mean, like perhaps in the John Hughes films of the 80s, people would be picking up the phone to talk to each other and you'd at least have someone's voice on the other end of it. What's quite hard to watch in this film is the silences that become between communication, because this is a generation, and I'm certainly a fool to it at times as well, where I would rather text or email than actually pick up the phone to talk to someone.
Me too.
And you, Kayla, could in theory talk to these people, and instead she is just presented, as you say, with silent faces on a feed of people having a good time, and then unresponded messages.
She tries. Yeah. She tries to talk to them so much. And you can see her trying in every different way as well. Like, it's not... Like, the whole film is her trying to be herself and trying to be a normal human being, whatever that means. And she goes at it through so many different ways. Like, she'll go at it scrolling on Twitter, and can I just say, they created every account for real.
Oh.
And there are no screen replacements at any point. They were so, like, determined to make everything real because, like, screens are so vital.
Oh, yeah, come on. Every time you see a fake version of Google or Facebook or something.
So and even, like, the reflection of her face.
Yeah.
Everything's real every time.
That's great.
And you can tell that Bo Burnham, he really wanted to learn, like, he obviously knows, he was born on the internet, as a lot of us watching it are, but he also really wanted to learn from the people he was working with. So apparently a lot of the messaging scenes, at first he was doing them on Facebook, and then Elsie Fisher, the actress, was like, no one uses Facebook anymore, and that's why they switched it over to Instagram. And he's got all these things where you can tell it's a really collaborative process, and he's been asked lots of times, like, why was it a 14-year-old girl? And yeah, like, you're right, he was saying that after his stand-up shows, lots of girls would come up to him and be like, you really see me, you understand me. And at first he thought, like, how? And, like, this is insane. So that. And then also he was saying that when he was doing his research and, you know, wanting to find a character to write about, because he said at first, like, he just wanted to make a film about the internet, which he thought there really hadn't been a good one that had been made yet, which I'd agree with.
Not the emoji movie, no?
close okay, second, okay. Close second, yeah. Right. And he was looking through YouTube for these, like, young teenagers talking, and the line he always used was, boys were talking about Minecraft and girls were talking about their souls. Bertie, discuss.
yeah, well, I mean, I literally, when I was 13, I made, like, a handful of Minecraft videos, so I totally get that. I mean, and it's interesting, a thing that me and a few friends have done a few times is, on YouTube, you can filter, when you search something, you can filter it based on when it was uploaded and things like that. So if you search my first vlog and filter it by most recent, you'll get these videos that have been uploaded minutes ago, and it's always exactly like Kayla's vlogs. It's always these kids rambling, and often it's you know, it's pretty incoherent, but you can really see this attempt to you know, as we say, sort of be yourself and present this sort of this artificial version of yourself. But to what you were saying about how, you know, throughout the film she's trying desperately to communicate with people, and she's trying desperately to talk to people, and she's trying to figure out what is. Because, you know, she wants to be herself, but also she does want to please absolutely everyone and live this full, rich life of friends and things like that. And the moment that I just adore in the film is at the end, when she walks straight past the cute kid with the amazing eyes. That, and every
voted
time
best eyes.
Every time we meet him, it's so funny the way it's cut together. It's brilliant. Yeah. But the way she walks straight past him and just speaks to that girl in her class who's always quite mean to her. Mm. And you know, she just says, I've been trying to talk to you, and you just don't really respond. And I just think it's kind of rude. And then she gets on with her life. And then even the chicken nugget dinner.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God.
Please.
Weirdly, that scene, it's so funny and endearing, but it you know, it made me feel very emotional because I feel
I
like
think
that.
I it's the most wonderful thing.
Yeah, well, just to give it some context, there's a little boy who kind of is also kind of at the back of the class type lad. And
played by Jake Ryan, and he's absolutely wonderful.
Follow him on Twitter.
He is a little dream. Bessie, you gave us a little surprise fact about
him. Well, he's the same kid as the kid in Inside Llewyn Davis, who I believe, drinks some milk or has some cereal. Haven't seen that film in a while, but he consumed something.
Yeah, and arguably he's developing that performance now from milk, not just milk and cereal to chicken nuggets. And so him and Kayla have this wonderful chicken nugget dinner.
Yeah.
And it's just the loveliest thing in the world.
It's you know, we talk about this catharsis, and it's really the crystallization of, by the end of that film, after speaking to her dad and all that stuff and everything she goes through, it's the crystallizing of dropping that veneer and kind of removing that expectation, that desire to grow up, that desire to get on with your life, to leave eighth grade, to do all this stuff, to allow yourself to have a chicken nugget dinner with this weird kid who you met at a swimming pool. It's just, yeah, it's
and
incredible.
Do you think he's weirder than her?
Maybe.
Or like, he is a little
bit.
Do you think he's more awkward
or do you think she's more confident? But I'm really interested in their dynamic, like how much they're going to learn from each other.
Yeah.
Or, like,
I think it's a moment where Kayla kind of realizes that she actually, as much as she wants to be friends with certain people in the school, she actually comes to this realization that she can have friends who will do anything for her, whether it's, you know, buying every single option of sauces from McDonald's so that she can have whichever one she wants, and offering to give her, you know, his ones in case she wants extra or something. Those kinds
asking
of tiny,
if she likes the cutlery.
Yeah, those kinds of tiny just gestures of friendship that are so small, but really in the grand scheme of things and what she's been offered by other people and her peers previously, this is like, you know, sorry, this is like just the
it's
best
beautiful
thing ever.
Yeah.
It's so lovely.
Yeah, and I think you talking about their relationship, and I think, yeah, it's an interesting thing. He's very different to her in that, because when we first meet him, he's at the swimming pool and he says, like, do you want to see how long I can hold my breath?
Yeah.
And he's already, you know, an overtly quite strange character, but he seems pretty comfortable in his
skin.
And
he's like, look how much I can do.
Yeah.
I can impress you.
And so, like you said, I think, she could learn from him. And, and I think that's her journey. By the end, she's in a position to maybe be more outwardly herself and weird.
Yeah. And it's interesting that it's... At the start of the film, she's telling everyone how to be themselves. But I think the herself that we find at the end of the film is a very different one as well. Although maybe it was there all along.
Well, it ends with a vlog as well, that she speaks to her former self. And I love the idea that there's this time capsule throughout where at the beginning of the film, like as it's the end of eighth grade, and you can see all these bits that everyone's put in a shoebox to remind themselves of their journey and everything. And throughout, there is this sense of always looking slightly back on what you've just done. Like, it's not a sense of nostalgia, like something, I don't know, like mid-90s that we've seen or something. But there's always this understanding of, like, looking in on your life that you've only just lived. Mm. And I think it's so crucial to have that tiny gap to allow you to almost, like, rationalise and assess where you've been and how, like, the landscape is still shaping you as well.
Constantly and reimagining yourself and kind of,
And even in such a short runtime, like just over 90 minutes, you can see how much she's grown. And that's why it's so important for it to be at such an age as well, where, like, from one week to the next, she can have just, like, completely transformed based on one conversation she's had, based on one dinner she's had or something. Mm. It's magic. It's a magic age. And I'm so glad someone's finally, like, taking it completely seriously without making it this thing that you're really going to cry over and that will traumatise you. Because, like, that's happened before. Like, there have been serious roles for young kids and all that, but it tends to be really, really tragic or dramatic or really, really funny, or they're the side characters. And I haven't seen many films that strike that balance of being taken extremely seriously but without muting any of the, like, quite really ridiculous emotions and over-the-top feelings that we have, but that are allowed to be, like, as over-the-top as they are.
Yeah, I think it's such a refreshing story. And actually, I think, you know, a couple of podcasts ago when we were talking about mid-90s and some of the issues I have with that, I think what Bo Burnham does here really is quite revolutionary in terms of this coming of age story. And for me, it's the kind of refreshing and new narratives that we really need to see in these kinds of stories, and talking about teenagers and life on the internet, because, you know, it occupies so much of our public imagination now, and our attention is all about being safe online and how children interact and things like that. And this, for me, really just is it's such a wonderful film to capture that.
And it's just such a valid experience. And I think in general there is a sense that, you know, these kind of 13, 14-year-old girls aren't taken entirely seriously. And what we see is the version they put of themselves online, which, as we know from this film, isn't fully authentic. And it, perhaps if you look deeper, it exposes more and reveals more about what they're experiencing through social media. So like you said, it's so refreshing to see a film where that plight is just utterly respected. Because I don't know, those young women play, I don't know, a huge role in society, and again, especially social media, and it's such an interesting thing to tackle. And like you said, I'm so glad it lives somewhere now. Yeah.
All right. I think sadly we will have to wrap up there, but we could go on forever. I know we haven't mentioned the cinematography from Andrew Wader, which is phenomenal. This Gordon Willis style paranoia feeling to it, and Anna Meredith's amazing score as well. Go and seek that out if you can. We'll be back for Eighth Grade Part Two, the Chicken Nugget Diaries.
And I hope we will. I really hope we will.
It would have been ninth grade. No, what would it be?
Ninth grade. Nine comes after eight.
Yeah. Okay. Eight and a half.
Yeah, maybe. Summer vacation.
Yeah. All right. So you can see Eighth Grade and Ashes Purest White in cinemas this weekend. If you don't fancy going out to the cinema, you can always watch something on Curzon Home Cinema on your very own sofa. We spoke about Loro last week. That's the new Paolo Sorrentino film. That's on there. But one pairing to Eighth Grade that I've picked out is The Diary of a Teenage Girl, which is very much a coming-of-age story for a young girl, not of the Snapchat generation.
Absolutely.
Any fans of that one here?
It's a great film.
Yeah.
I think it really takes a young girl's coming of age very seriously and treats it with a lot of respect and maturity. Yeah.
If you've got any thoughts on Eighth Grade or Ashes Purest White, you can email us at podcast@curzon.com for next week's show, or tweet us at Curzon Cinemas. If it's your first time listening, do subscribe to the show. We're on iTunes, Acast, Spotify, wherever you get your pods, we will be there. And whilst you're there, if you could leave us a review, a star rating, a comment, that would be absolutely wonderful. And if you want to keep up with all of us here, you can follow Caitlin on Twitter at
CSA Quinlan.
Ella?
At EFE Kemp.
And Bertie, you're on Twitter as well.
Yeah, it's at Bertie Gilbert, but all the vowels in Gilbert are gone. Just search Bertie.
Because you're cool.
Well, no, someone took... Anyway, just search. You'll find me. You'll find me. Just search my name.
All right. And I am at Jake H. Cunningham. Thank you so much for listening. Farewell.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.